Three messages before we get started. If you're a tech entrepreneur, don't you have unique legal needs that the average lawyer can't help you with? That's why you need Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. If you read his articles on VentureBeat, you know that he can help you with issues like raising money or issuing stock options or even deciding whether to form a corporation. Scott Edward Walker is the entrepreneur's lawyer. See him at walkercorporatelaw.com. And do you remember when I interviewed Sarah Sutton Fell about how thousands of people pay for her job site? Look at the biggest point that she made. She said that she has a phone number on every page of her site because, and here's a stat, 95% of the people who call end up buying. Most people, though, don't call her, but seeing a real number increases their confidence in her and they buy. So try this. Go to grasshopper.com and get a phone number that will make your company sound professional. Add it to your site and see what happens. Grasshopper.com. And remember Patrick Buckley, who I interviewed? He came up with an idea for an iPad case. He built a store to sell it, and in a few months, he generated about $1 million in sales. Well, the platform he used is Shopify. If you have an idea to sell anything, set up your store on Shopify.com because Shopify stores are designed to increase sales. Plus, Shopify makes it easy to set up a beautiful store and manage it. Shopify.com. Here's the program. Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And in this interview, I want to find out how a site that was launched on WordPress is now doing over 1 million monthly visitors. Derek Flansreich is the founder of Greatest, a health and media startup dedicated to inspiring and informing the world to make healthier choices. I invited him here to talk about how he built up his company. Hey, Derek.
Hey, Andrew. Good to be here.
Hey, how many unique visitors are you now doing on a monthly basis? I think the number's gone up since my notes, right?
Yeah, so we're at just under 2 million uniques per month now.
Just under 2 million uniques, and they come over to the site and they get what?
And they get, you know, we'd like to think among the highest quality fitness, health, and happiness content that includes tips, news, recipes, workouts, basically anything somebody 18 to 35 years old would need to know everything they need to know about preventive health.
What about revenue? I see traffic, but what size revenue are you guys doing?
So we've been basically ignoring it. The idea has been build a meaningful brand and an audience in a space that has traditionally been very easy to make money the easy way. And we think we do it the hard way now so that in the long run, we can build the trusted brand.
And the easy way is what in your space?
Health and wellness, I think, is a industry that's famous, maybe infamous for, shady affiliate links and shitty ebooks and stuff like that. So we kind of take the extreme opposite angle of that, and we don't do any of that. And then every fact is cited by a PubMed study, a scientific study. Every article is approved by multiple experts. We're obsessed. We have a chief research officer on our team. I mean, we're obsessed with making it high quality, but it's fun to read and super shareable.
Okay. Yeah, it really is. In fact, one of the things that I've learned from you is how to make stuff more shareable. Where did this idea come from?
You know, it was just a kind of my own frustration. I've been sort of starting media-related things my entire very short life. All the things that I've started, middle school, high school, and college, have stuck around. And I think, still much bigger and better than I left them. And I kind of realized at the end of college that this was what I was stuck with, and this was the hand I was dealt, and that this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And I joined a startup out in San Francisco called Clicker. They sold to CBS for, triple figure millions, reportedly. And then, I started Greatest, and Greatest really came out of my own personal frustration, sort of sucking at health and wellness. I was really into it, but I just sucked at it and, didn't understand why I was having so much trouble. Finding out what things I should be doing in a space in which so many people seem to know what they were doing. Why was I struggling?
What do you mean? Were you fat? Were you out of shape? What was the deal?
Yeah. I mean, so I definitely, I was never like 350 pounds or anything. I was definitely a chubby kid growing up. But I'd say it was more about listening to people and taking their advice when I shouldn't have been the people I listened to, or reading something online that I read and believed that I shouldn't have.
Do you have an example of something that you heard and believed and now you're going, that was just stupid?
Yeah, so many things. In LA one summer, I asked a trainer that was just, you know, there in the gym and really fit, what I could do to lose some weight, and he recommended that I drink Muscle Milk. Muscle Milk is sort of it's like a ready-made protein smoothie, and it is not something you would drink to lose weight. It's just like the opposite of what you would drink. And maybe he was joking. I don't know. But I drank 2, maybe 3 a day for an entire summer, like an idiot. And, you know, at the end of the summer, I said, wow, I really didn't lose any weight. Maybe this thing with 300 calories is, and all these sugar and carbs is what's done it. So, you know, look, that was probably an honest mistake, but it really kind of hit home this idea that it is hard to know what to trust. And began me really thinking about what it would mean to build something that people could trust. And so I just began talking about it a lot, and my friends started turning to me for help. You know, I had a friend who, just a high school friend of mine who was always very small, and he sort of asked me for my workouts, and I said, look, I don't know what I'm doing, but here's the workout that I do. And he left for some kind of long break, and the next time I saw him, he was, you know, big and stronger. And I said, what did you do? And he said, oh, I just did what you told me lots of times. and so I saw the difference that I could make in people's lives and was just surprised that they were turning to me for help.
What about this, though?
Yeah.
Creating good content is tough in this space because you're right. It's full of charlatans who are trying to sell you some junk. But getting traffic, even if you have high quality content, is really difficult. It should scare off a lot of people from starting media companies because there's so many people out there doing it, yelling at the same audience. Did you have any experience? I see here on your LinkedIn profile that at Clicker, you were an associate marketing manager. Is that where you figured out how to get traffic? Where'd you learn?
Yeah. You know, the true answer is probably my personal blog. I wrote in my personal blog to sort of get a job out of college. I had everything I started. Middle school, I started a school newspaper. In high school, I started this online political forum and political newsletter. In college, I started an online TV show and then an online TV network. So all of it was media related, and all of it was about finding an audience.
And what did you learn back then about how to find an audience, even as far back as you went to Harvard, and the video, I think, was kind of like an American Idol type of show?
Yeah, no, we did like a daily show for Harvard News. I mean, you know, we managed to convince half the college to watch it every time it came out every 2 weeks. And I don't think you could convince half of college to do anything.
What was it that you learned back then? What did you do that you said, aha, I think I know one of the levers at least for getting traffic?
Yeah, well, one of them was using humor and making it entertaining. So obviously we were doing like a daily show, so it was humorous. It was about a topic that was super relevant to the student body because they were, you know, the student body of the college we were talking about. I actually think that humor and relevancy is super important even today. We try to use those two skills. The other thing was finding where people were. So the major like distribution platform we used back then were listservs, just email lists for the different residential houses, because that's where the students were. And basically we learned to spam it, like, you know, not in a terrible way, but in a way every time the, you know, episodes came out, really sort of hitting home that this is something people should watch.
How did you get those guys to let you email their audience?
Well, we built out a team of like 60 students. So students were in every single house. And so we would sometimes, if we didn't have a house that we had a representative at, we would try to go and recruit, you know, some, you know, writer over there.
Gotcha. But now because they're over there, they have the ability to message the whole group, and boom, you now have access to more audience.
Yeah. You know, in a funny way, it's no different than social media today, right? It's no different than finding people in a certain Reddit community, subreddit that are, you know, really active and influential, and asking them for help. So I think, you know, not knowing anything, we figured out how to do that, and to some extent. And at Clicker also, that was, at some point that was my job, right? To help, sort of like the growth hacking thing. And then,
let's not pass by that.
Yeah.
Clicker was run by or founded by Jim Lanzone. He actually did an interview here about that company and how he built it up. Sold very quickly. I still use it actually. When I want to find a video online, I don't know where. Do I go to Amazon? Do I go to Netflix? I just want to watch this freaking thing. And
that's
so Clicker
product.
Is like the internet's TV guide. What did you do there? What kind of growth hacking tactics did you have for them?
Yeah. I think it was a different. It was an interesting time when I joined the company. I joined the company less than 6 months before they sold to CBS. Mm-hmm. And they were, I think, trying to decide whether they wanted to sell the company or maybe had decided already. So I showed up 2 months out of college after they had hired me to a very different startup than the one that had hired me. And I got the job because of my personal blog where I'd been writing about digital media. Again, same kind of stuff. But writing about digital media and using sort of this TV experience, online TV experience that I had, and began writing very popular blog posts hitting the top of Hacker News and stuff like that. And that was my real sort of taste of, online
Clicker,
success.
For Clicker, you hit the top of Hacker News?
When I joined Clicker, the first thing I did, I got into a lot of trouble for this, actually, I wrote this big post about... looking back on it, it was a really a douchey post, but I didn't mean it to be douchey. I just didn't know any better. I was writing this post about how I, graduated from Harvard. I turned down this job at Google and went to go join this exciting startup. And it was just sort of about how I'm entrepreneurial and sort of telling that story. And the idea was I wanted to promote Clicker. I wanted to show up and them to say, wow, you already, day one brought so much attention and traffic. And it was a very pop. And I was trying. And it got picked up by Business Insider, which was nothing like that had ever happened to me. And then the San Francisco Chronicle, reprinted it on their blog. So a lot of people saw it. Now, I didn't get all my facts straight, and then Clicker said, look, we hired you, so you have to, pass this by us in the future. They were just surprised by the attention, and it probably didn't hurt that it was sort of a little, it was a little, I didn't mean it to be bombastic. I meant it to, help people, but I also was, right out of college, and... didn't really know what I was doing. So
was it like this post?
Anyway,
I didn't read the post, but is what you're saying is that you feel like you acted like you knew it all in the post?
No, I was just trying. I think the reason why people took to it is because I was like, screw that college I went to and screw Google. I'm joining this hot, sexy startup. And people said, hey, man, you're so blessed and so lucky to do all those things. Don't look down on the people who made those decisions. And they're right. Ultimately, that's not how I meant it. I meant it to help basically give people the balls to just do the startup thing. So it was very well intentioned, but it might not have come across perfectly. The point was that it was my first real taste of how writing good content, because I think it was good, right? It was a little controversial, but it was good. It had a great title, which is still so super important. And, it got that attention and got published by these big publishers. And then it got me all these emails from big people saying, what are you doing? What's happening? It's so exciting. And so at some very small level, it was my first sort of trying to hack the social media, platforms and trying to make the most of it with content again.
Okay. All right. So now you have this idea. I have a little bit of background getting traffic, but frankly, not that much. I really expected coming into this interview that you
would
especially, I think I might have seen too much in your LinkedIn profile. I looked at it and go, oh, then maybe he did it for Clicker. No, very little, but you had a passion for this topic and you had this belief that this needed to get done. And one of the first things you did was you emailed certain people. This is before you even launched, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell the audience who you emailed and what happened?
Sure. Yeah. So basically decided I wanted to do this thing, obsessed with building this brand people could trust in the space, felt there was a super big void. And so I recruited a few friends to write for me for free, and we started working on it, but we didn't launch anything. And the idea was, start creating great content that's this total extreme of everything else, and start building that brand. But we didn't release any of it. Waited 2 months or something like that before we even launched. And in the meantime, I decided that one way that we would launch and get sort of the initial traction and attention would be to have influencers mention us. Because we had this sort of runway and lead time, I decided to go and ask them for help. So I wrote down a list of 100 influencers in the space. I mean, I knew this space pretty well, but it took some research. And I emailed, 100 influencers, every single person who sort of has an audience in fitness, health, and happiness. And the email basically said, I'm trying to start this brand people trust. It was personalized to each of them. I really like the way that you connect with your audience through using humor, but using such information that's grounded in so much science. We're trying to do something similar. Do you have any advice for me? An email will work, or you can even, if you have the time to make a call, that'd be great. So send it to 100 of them. This took me probably a weekend, but I really wrote personalized emails to all of them.
Can you give me a few examples of these people?
Yeah. Basically everybody in the space. I mean, Tara Parker Pope, who's a writer for the New York Times, Mary Nassel, who's famous writer for the Food Politics blog and writes on basically all kind of political issues around food. A bunch of fitness guys like John Romanello, and a bunch of other ones. Basically anyone who had an audience. And followed up a few times. And by the end of probably 2-3 follow-ups, my rule was 3 follow-ups, 70% of them had responded in some way.
The connection was a little weak. So 70%, you're saying, responded in some way. And you were asking them just for advice?
Yeah, just for help, just what they thought. And, a specific thing that was relevant to what they were good at. The idea was turn these influencers into kind of stakeholders and also maybe get some cool advice, in the meantime.
Because you're feeling like if they help you now, they're going to feel connected to the project. They're going to want your site to succeed and your business to do well.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that what we were doing was really good, right? I genuinely believed it. And I genuinely wanted their help. And I also genuinely wanted them to know what we were doing so that when we did come out, they felt some kind of ownership of it.
Can you give me an example of someone who responded especially well? Give me a sense of what's possible if we do something like this.
Sure. I mean, so, like I said, 70% responded. Many of them we've still kept in touch with very closely. It's probably like a year and a half since we launched. One of them was an investor in our seed round. Probably somewhere between 10 and 20 are experts in our expert network, and we regularly talk to them. And nearly all of them shared our stuff when we launched, and lots of them continue to share our stuff. So we're no longer, this random competitor to them, which we never intended to be for most of them. We're no longer, this random blog that no one's ever heard of. Instead, we're this, this thing that started by Derek, this guy that they interacted with way back then, and they have some kind of a piece of that history. And one of the main tactics we use to build our audience is we think of friends and those relationships as just another tool like email and like, social, because they have a following that oftentimes we can't reach. That following are the people we want, following our blog. They've already expressed an interest in these topics. And so they help us reach them.
Did these experts who you reached out to, did they give you testimonials or anything that could help you with your credibility as a new entrepreneur of a new site?
Yeah. So the idea was we wanted from day one to look like we'd been around for 5 years and we're the most trusted resource on the web. So no testimonials for us. We had, like I said, we had built up, stockaded like 2 months of content very purposefully. We did have a lot of responses when people came to our site that said, how have I missed this? How long have you guys been around? So we were trying, the influencers might have known that we were a new site. The people who they were broadcasting it to may not have. And we weren't trying to trick them. We just, in this space, it's very hard to build trust. And one of the ways to lose it is to be the new kid on the block. And we wanted to not look like the new kid on the block, at the very least.
For the record, by the way, I've done interviews with people who sold the scammy stuff because I wanted to find out how they built their businesses. I love hearing those stories. I understand not wanting to be associated with them and being disgusted that they're in your space, because when you go to a party and you tell people that you're in health and fitness, they say, ooh, I don't want to buy those ebooks or the Akahi berries. But man, those guys do well. It's tempting, I imagine, to try to do something like that.
So I have to admit that I also watch them. I find it super interesting. You know, I think a lot of the tactics they use are tactics we will, you know, there are not that many ways to make money on the internet, right? There are not that many ways to make money, period. And so at some level, we will do similar style things, right? We will probably sell some kind of products. We will probably connect people in some way to other people. There are all these different, there aren't that many ways to do it, basically. And so the ways that they do it are really interesting. And the tactics, we might do similar things, but the product has to be super high quality. And for us, we're building greatest because we think people deserve better. And because I was frustrated that there was no place I could turn to on a reliable basis and trust. And everyone on my team, everybody is here because we think that that needs to exist. And that we've got the opportunity to build that brand, like the defining health and wellness brand that people can rely on.
On the scammy level, who do you especially not admire, but who's especially impressive?
Oh, man. You know who's really good? Dr. Mercola.
Who?
Dr. Mercola.
Who is he and what's so good about him?
Well, you can make a lot of money from supplements. Mm-hmm. He is a doctor and he sells supplements. And his emails are the only kind of scammy style emails that I can't help but open because his subject headlines are so good. And I wonder when he sends these supplements and these products, I wonder, you know, he's a doctor, he's a real guy. So I think, you know, he has, maybe that's, look, I don't know how trusted Dr. Mercola is. So I don't mean to call him like a scam artist because I'm not sure he is. I don't really know.
That's the problem. You can't tell who's what, but you're saying his marketing is especially impressive. You want to keep reading it.
Yes. Especially because he's a doctor, right? Okay. And so we, from day one of the things that really frustrates me about health and wellness is that at the end of, if they cite some expert and they involve some expert in most articles, and I mean seriously, most articles, like in every publication across the web in health and wellness, they'll just at the end like mention some trainer or some doctor who agrees. This really bothered me because you can find a doctor or a trainer who agrees with basically anything. And so we, for example, in our articles, it's at least two experts approving every single one. And we also have our own expert network in which it's super highly curated, the only people we turn to. So that was sort of our like angle to be very extreme against that. But these like small indicators and signals of trust are really big and especially tough if you're a startup. And I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be an expert. I'm like everyone else struggling to make these, you know, just make these healthier choices one at a time. Nobody on our direct full-time staff is a doctor or a trainer or a dietitian. Many have degrees in related fields, but we rely on our experts for that. We're just the translators, right? We do the research. All of our writers are research nerds. We do the research. We summarize it in a way that's makes sense and that's fun and most importantly, useful and actionable. And then we turn to our experts to make sure that we are absolutely 100% verified. We don't publish an article unless it gets two thumbs up from both experts.
All right. I want to get to how you grew the traffic, because that's the impressive part that I wanted to do the interview about. And we're talking about a site that's about a year old that's kicking my butt as far as traffic, frankly. And you don't have a writing background. How did you find the writers who are going to create this content?
Yeah. Originally I just asked my friends who I thought were really good at writing.
Did you pay them?
And I did not. I think the only amount of money we spent in the first 2 months of Greatest was $500 on design of the website.
Why?
I think that one, we weren't making any money. I wasn't sure that this would ever become something with just content that could make enough money. I always knew that that was always step one of what we're doing. I didn't want to start earning lots of money. The other thing was that throughout my life, I had convinced people to work for free. In many ways, you know, my experience at college, starting one student organization from 0 to 60 students, another from 0 to something like 350 students, the sort of larger online TV network for the college, convinced me that getting volunteers is so much better than paying people.
Really? Why?
Because they care about what you're doing. And there's this real, for what we're doing, it's very hard, right? I think all startups are hard, right? And we, though we write content, think very much of ourselves as a startup. And convincing people to work for very little money or no money is very hard. And if you convince them, it means they're in it for something else. And I love that. Like, I love the idea that we were creating a TV, online TV show at my university because people genuinely thought it was important that we do it, right? The students were learning how to, like, run a camera, something they'd never done before, purely because they thought it was important that we poke and satirize, you know, the university. So here it's no different, except the difference is it's just bigger and more meaningful, right? We want to help people think of health and wellness in a healthier way. And we when we interview people for new jobs, if they don't believe extraordinarily passionately in this vision of the future and want to have a hand in shaping it, regardless of their experience, we just don't hire them.
Why spend the money on design? If you're going to spend it on anything, why is design so important to you?
I think it all comes back to trust. You know, of the indicators that we could control, right? No certifications. We don't have years and years of like time to build it. What could we control? And the answer was the quality of the content, which was totally, you know, something I could do and we as writers could, my writing team could figure out. But the design we couldn't do ourselves. And the design, you know, using every example from mint.com where you would be, you know, entering your credit card information and never blink, wondering whether it was really secure, to, you know, every website we see now on the internet that focuses on design, it's such an important signal of trust. And that to us was the key thing that we were willing to spend some money on.
I mentioned at the top of the interview that you guys launched on WordPress. Most people who consider WordPress, or who I even recommend WordPress to, will say, I'm not a blogger. It's just, that's too simple. I have a much bigger vision. Andrew, you insult. They act like I insult their idea by even suggesting WordPress. Why didn't you feel insulted when you considered WordPress and instead you actually launched on it?
Well, we didn't want to spend any money. So that was step one. I had actually worked with WordPress on my personal blog again. So I knew that it was, at least to my knowledge, the more or less most flexible, popular platform. We also didn't have any inside, you know, we didn't have a dev team. And so I was doing, and up until relatively recently, was doing a shocking percentage of the dev work. And I don't have any, you know, experience doing that. I just would like figure it out. And so I was familiar with it. And I knew that there were enough forums on the web that if we ran into problems, I could fix it. And there were some pretty embarrassing, you know, episodes in the very early in our history when suddenly we got all this traffic and I had no idea what to do when the site went down, and I had no idea what I should, you know, what tactic to take. We had, you know, some kind of spam or some kind of attack or something. So it all got worked out, but it was just a platform that I was comfortable with. And look, we're still on WordPress. We're actually switching to Drupal at the end of this year. We're doing a big site redesign and adding a community. It's just another, at some level.
Why'd you decide that instead of just, what was the community feature that WordPress has? I forget.
Yeah. We just want to do something a little different. We wanted it to be a little more customized. We wanted a little more flexibility in the future, but look, it took us a year and a half to get to that point. The other thing is that the dev team that we've built now like Drupal. So, you know, it's you know, what are they comfortable with? Again, similar to me, right? Similar to my experience, you know, give people the tools that they are most comfortable with.
Why stock so much content? In retrospect, do you think it would have been better if you would have written it as you were publishing it so you can get feedback from the audience and write to that feedback instead of anticipating what they would want?
Yeah, so I would say typically the answer to that would be yes, that would be the better idea. I think in our case, absolutely not. I think that the health and wellness space is just too full of shitty content. And look, honestly, looking back at our stuff, we were trying so hard not to make our content bad. We were trying to make it the absolute extreme opposite, but we didn't know what we were doing. We'd never done this before. And it took us around 2 months to get to a point where we thought we were good enough. And then we went back and systematically updated. And by the way, we continued update all our content. We're probably, I think, the only site that I know of in at least health and wellness that just goes back and updates with new studies, you know, new jokes, whatever it is. We go back and redo
update
these articles.
The old articles.
Yeah,
I see.
Absolutely.
All right. So now you're launched. You have a philosophy. You have content. You have nice design. You have a platform that you can easily adjust and build on. It's time to get traffic. Do you remember your first effort to get traffic? What happened?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, the first was reaching out to all those influencers, and then I think we probably threw it up on Hacker News.
The influencers, before we continue, what kind of impact did they have on traffic?
It was, you know, that was probably the major source of our traffic for the first few months, was sort of the followers we gained through that. We struggled, kind of floundered around. We did great. I mean, off the sort of gate, people really enjoyed our content and started coming back. And people started finding us and enjoying what we were doing, probably mostly due to those influencers.
So influencer would say, hey, you know what? I gave this guy, Derek, some advice. He asked me for some feedback. I like him. He's a good guy. He launched. Of course, I got a tweet. So I'm going to tweet.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to put it on Facebook too. What's the most kind of promotion did you get that you got from this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, maybe a blog post.
Okay.
Where they mentioned us in some way. And, you know, then we just continued those relationships. So we would share relevant articles and stuff like that. So it was probably, we launched in April. In June, I was living in San Francisco, moved to New York, and hired people. I felt like there was enough attention that we had to get a little serious about this. We hired three people, moved into my apartment, and actually three of the four of us lived in that apartment. Classic sort of startup story. And we started to write more content, right? The idea was if we write more content at the same quality, more people will come. And it didn't really happen. And we sort of started getting very worried. And November of last year, so exactly a year ago, was our worst month yet. I mean, worse than our first month. To put it in perspective, yesterday we had 35,000 unique visitors more than we did the entire month of November last year. So it was not very much. And we started getting very scared and began wondering what was wrong, and talk a lot about how we could become more relevant to our audience. Going back to sort of, you know, I didn't really realize this, but it makes so much sense. Back at school, we were asking the same question. We were saying, you know, in college, how do we be more relevant to the student body? And we were thinking the same. How do we become more relevant to our audience and narrow our audience? And so we made a pretty ballsy kind of decision to focus only on 18 through 35 year olds. The idea had been up until then that we wanted to be, you know, the health and wellness resource for everyone, which, you know, in retrospect, sounds silly, but at the time, that was, you know, just genuinely what we wanted to be. But we wrote about it in this fresh, young voice, and we just hadn't committed. So we decided to commit, and a part of that conversation was, where are these 18 to 35-year-olds? Again, much like, you know, what I had done previously, whether at Clicker or whether, you know, at college, it was, you know, where is this audience we're trying to reach? And so the answer was social media. And so we started getting very aggressive as a team, proactive on social media, and began playing with this thing called Pinterest, which was just growing at the time. People had started talking about it, trying to find where are the people who are sharing health and fitness stuff, where are they sharing food and drink. And it turns out that on Pinterest, the third and fourth most popular categories were those two topics. So we went all in and we started amping up all our visuals. We found tons of contributing photographers, started writing about, you know, content that we thought that would be relevant to that crowd. And Pinterest was a huge, huge sort of spark plug for us. We kind of grew with them. And
How do you use Pinterest to get traffic back to your site, to greatest.com?
Yeah, a bunch of ways. So one is just, you know, posting visuals. Part of that is our contributing photographers and illustrators. Some of our in-house team does it. Creating relevant content, paying very close attention to what people share, and repin. And so if people repin a lot of stuff, we don't just share our stuff. If we share somebody else's and that gets very popular, we say, you know, what is it about this topic that was relevant to this crowd? And the idea was build the definitive resources on these things, right? If we want to be the guide for people to go to help them make these healthier choices, we need to create, you know, very micro, small resources for them to come to. The other way that we played with was putting the names of the titles in the photos themselves. So for recipes on Pinterest, it's obvious people will click. Basically, Pinterest, for those that don't know, it's sort of like a pin board, and there are, you know, all these visuals, and people share, you know, create these pin boards and then add the photos they want. So they don't necessarily click on them. They're actually just kind of, you know, like collecting them. For the recipes, people will click because they want the recipe, and they assume behind this image of this food that looks delicious is a recipe.
So for other topics, I'm checking out your traffic stats, and I'm checking out your Pinterest. So yes, even if I go to Alexa and do a quick search, I can see that your number one source of traffic is Pinterest.com, and it's for category equals health fitness. So I went into that, and I see here, for example, Hope, a woman who I guess is a fan of yours, just repinned something that Megan posted, and it's a collection of these beautiful healthy foods called healthy detox foods. So what happens is Hope's friends and Megan's friends see that, and anyone else who's looking for health and fitness will see it and come to your site and get to a post called 19 Ways to Detox Your Diet. And that's the process. And the reason that all this happened is because at the very top, you have this beautiful photo of foods, and the title is Detox Foods. Do I have this right?
Yeah, but there are lots of different ways to do it. We've tried all kinds. So one is, you know, a sort of general image with the headline, the topic of the article. We would probably write something like the 19 ways, like the only, you know, all our lists sort of are comprehensive and exhaustive. So the idea is like the only ways to like detox your diet or something like that, right? As an example to use, we have this, probably one of our most popular articles is the 88 healthy recipe substitutions. So all of them. Literally, I challenge people to come up with new ones, and we're going to update it in the next few weeks. It's been around a year since we put it out with these new ones. It'll be like 92 or something like that. But the way we share it on Pinterest is, one, put the title inside of a photo, right? So it would literally say, you know, 88 healthy recipe substitutions.
I see. So okay, here's one. 22 kettlebell exercises.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's one way. That's a really obvious way, and honestly works wonders. And I'd like to think that we made that up. I'm not sure if that's true. Maybe some other people were doing it on Pinterest, but basically I was sitting around saying, look, no one's clicking on these things. How do we get them to click? Oh, we should just tell them there's stuff behind it. The other way to do it is to share different photos from within the article and then say, you know, peanut butter and 87 other healthy recipe substitutions. So you see that beautiful photo, you share it, and then you notice that there is, in the like language itself, there's more if you want more where that came from.
By the way, this one, 19 ways to detox your diet, was pinned 821 times.
Yeah.
That's freaking insane. In comparison, Google Plus, of course, only 3. Twitter, 35. The Twitter that we think of as massive, 35 shares there. Pinterest, 821. Here's the other thing that I learned by going over to Alexa. You get a lot of traffic from high-protein snacks as a phrase, kettlebell workouts. In fact, if I put those search terms into Twitter, into Google, high-protein snacks, for example, you guys are first result.
Yeah.
You big on an SEO? Yeah, who does your SEO?
Me. I mean, I did a little SEO when I was at Clicker, but I'm not going to lie. My whole belief about SEO comes down to a very simple metaphor, which is that if you are opening gifts under a Christmas tree, before you know how good the gift is, you're going to open the one that has the best wrapping. And so my belief about SEO is you just wrap it as well as everyone else's. And then if your gift is the best, Google will pop it up to the top. So Google search makes up 10 to 15 maybe percent of our total traffic right now. And social is 60%, roughly 60%.
And of all of social, what's number one?
Pinterest.
What percentage of your overall traffic would you say comes from Pinterest?
It's probably roughly 25, maybe a quarter. The truth is that StumbleUpon and Facebook and Reddit, but StumbleUpon and Facebook probably come pretty close to Pinterest now. Pinterest is still our number one, but those are probably our biggest ones. With Google search, we just think we're writing the best quality content, and people link to it because it is. And so it's taken us a little while, but we rank for some pretty amazing, awesome phrases. And
fitness blogs, you seem to rank for. Or,
yeah.
Top health blogs, I guess. All right. So you're still figuring this stuff out in the early days. You're still trying to get a handle on it. What else in the early days worked for you?
What else?
Here's something that you told April. Sorry, I just interrupted. You're about to do something.
No, please, go.
Here's what you told April. You said on Reddit, it helped to create a specific infographic just for Reddit so that would get voted up.
Yeah, so I mentioned, I kind of like hinted at this earlier, but one of the ways that we wanted to get out into the community was to produce the best quality content for them, right? The definitive article on X, the definitive infographic on Y. And Reddit is notorious for having these really, really active subreddits. And I, I'm like a lurker, and now I kind of participate a little. But for the most part, these subreddits have hundreds of thousands of people, or at least tens of thousands, that are super passionate about a phrase. But you can't just pop in as a brand and say, hey, check out this great article we wrote for you. Because that's not cool. And we knew that, right? We live and breathe. Everyone on our team lives and breathes this stuff and is on Reddit and all the time and on Twitter. And that's our edge, right? Is that we know and understand these communities. And so to kind of break into fitness, which is one of the major health and wellness subreddits on Reddit, we decided to create literally an infographic on that subreddit, right? So their recommendations for how to start get into fitness.
The people on Reddit's recommendations.
Yeah.
I see it here. This is Reddit's guide to fitness.
Yeah.
Right? At the very top, I see the Reddit alien and with the disclaimer about where it comes from. And then all these exercises that they recommend, you just put a photo on or an image next to them.
Yeah. So what we did was we worked with a bunch of the moderators. So we immediately reached out to people who moderate this community. We said, we want to build this great infographic. We were working with another startup called Photocracy that came in some ways out of that subreddit. So they're friends of ours, and that gave us a little legitimacy. And we said, hey, we want to build this beautiful thing. Will you help us? And so we got the two of the moderators of this subreddit to help us. build this and craft it. And once, and so then we built it, you'll notice that in the infographic, we actually literally quote from many of the popular members of the community. The idea was we really wanted to create an awesome, the awesome infographic for this entire community. And when we released it, it was shared by one of the moderators. And I have to say that the response was probably the least negative response that I've ever seen on Reddit. Everyone was really thrilled. They were like, this is awesome. And a visual, you know, rendition of this thing that we spent lots of, you know, a long time creating. And since then, we pop up all the time there. Or again, someone says, oh my God, I didn't realize someone created this infographic. So
what did this cost you?
We outsourced the design of the infographic
to a company called Voltaire Digital.
Yeah, a company called Voltaire Digital. I think then they changed their name to Voltaire Creative, and then they were named, hired by Blue Glass. But at the time, they were like this small Tampa, Florida firm that I had convinced we could, you know, help move them places. And by the way, they later wrote a case study on this exact incident for the Blue Glass blog. And I think we actually helped them a ton. But basically, we convinced them to sell us infographics for a really cheap rate because we were so focused on quality and because we had been delivering so much traffic to these things.
And apparently, this was also put up on Mashable, and other sites took the infographic. But yeah, you know what I didn't realize about this, and what I especially admire, is you went to the moderators. And so even if this didn't get much traffic, the fact that you built the relationship with the moderators who are helping you put this together, and you created this and designed this with the moderators, gives you an in. You're no longer a stranger in that community who's trying to worm his way into getting traffic. You're now a guy who's worked with them before and part of the conversation.
And look, it's exactly the same thing we did before we launched, right? When I send out all those emails to those influencers, turn them into stakeholders, right? It's the same thing, just on a smaller level. I mean, I think that there are lots of really skeezy ways to do it. And I think the way that we always do it, you know, we say do it the greatest way, right? Because it works and it's a pun with our name. But the idea is that when we do outreach or we do link building, we're just trying to make friends, and we mean it, right? The people on our team who send these emails, whether it's me or whether it's anyone else, it's a really genuine, hey, I like your stuff. We don't send it to people if we don't like their stuff. I like your stuff. Here's why. Can we work together? Here's this value we want to provide for you. And, you know, people appreciate it. You know, we said, look, we want to create this beautiful visual guide. We're obsessed with the quality of our content. You know, let us do this for you, you know, fit it. And the moderator said, heck yeah.
What's another example of something like that you guys have done?
Another example.
Partnering up with a major site.
Yeah. So we do a lot of cross-promotion, social media cross-promotion. So social media, you know, like I said, drives the majority of our traffic. We have very engaged followings on, you know, all the sort of major social networks. And from very early on, we said, what is our value? Our value is, you know, the high-quality content. And so we reached out to a bunch of very big brands and said, hey, let us cross-promote your stuff if you'll cross-promote ours. And we now get shared by... Our content is probably shared by every major sports brand in the space, from ESPN Women's to, you know, Equinox, to Shape and Self magazines, all of them. They all share it. Men's Fitness.
Say they share it and you share theirs, what do you mean? You reblogging it, or you're putting it on Twitter?
I mean, only Twitter and Facebook, right? So super just, and some Pinterest, but mostly Twitter and Facebook. We don't post anything on our site that is not originally exclusively written for us. So we reached out to them. We said, hey, we write all this great content. I know you're looking for stuff to post. How about you start posting ours, and we'll, you know, also cross-promote you. And people seem to take this really great. And so we just said, look, we can provide this value for them. All these social media managers are struggling to find great stuff to share. And so what we see is that all of these major brands just share our stuff all the time because they know that they can come to the site, find something that's relevant to their audience, and trust that it is high quality, which is, you know, exactly what we're trying to do.
By the way, I'm still spying on you as we talk. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Now that the internet in this office is so powerful, I can actually look at the websites that we're talking about as we're talking about them, but I'm wondering if it's going to be distracting. Anyway, so one thing I noticed is Etsy took one of your images and put it up on its site and linked back to the article where they took it, but I guess they're linking to a broken URL on your site. I'll put it in Skype chat. You might want to check that out and see how they're doing it. But it looks like that's a popular page there.
Great. I will look into that. What about this? Yeah.
You mentioned do it the greatest way. Greatest, the word, is not spelled the way your domain is, right?
Yeah. So here's the idea, right? The idea, the pitch, and the vision, the big vision, is that we just want to help people know they don't have to be the greatest all the time, but a greatest, right? So it's just about building health and wellness into your life one choice at a time. So a greatest with an IST is just someone who makes these healthier choices however they can. And the idea, and you know, like I said, the goal is to just help people think of this in a healthier way. My whole approach to health and wellness and our whole perspective on the blog is very relatable and down to earth. It says, look, like swap out some of those French fries with vegetables, maybe with your burger and enjoy your burger, right? And so I think that, you know, personally, I think that is the message that's important to bring to people, is to empower them to know they're in charge and in control.
What about the idea that, as far as traffic,
yeah,
unless I said this, I'm wondering if most people who heard us talk about greatest would go to greatest.com and end up on something called Cyberfinder, which is basically referral click traffic.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure that that happens. One, we never tried to reach out and buy EST.com because I imagine it would be very expensive. I know who owns it.
I do.
And one day I will reach out to them. But I actually like the IST. I think that we want to build a brand. So one, it's got that idea behind it. The second is it's got this differentiated brand. I think one of the things that a lot of people struggle with, probably Clicker included, is that by picking a sort of generic brand name with no uniqueness, no differentiation, it's very hard to build something bigger. So when you think about Nike or Lululemon, these can be aspirational lifestyle brands because no one really uses that term in that way. And so we want people to think of themselves as greatests and remember that it's a little different than just the word. I think Good Magazine really struggles with this. Any of these big things that have, and even look at all these men's health, women's health, you know, these are about as good as you get in terms of brands that people recognize in this space, but they can never be more than what they are. And we have, I'd like to think that our potential is endless in terms of what we can do to make a difference in this space. You know, it's no accident that greatest gym sounds good or greatest grub. Sometimes we joke in the office that we're going to start a theme park and call them greatest gardens. But you know, the idea is it can travel further.
The other thing that I wanted to ask is about confirming traffic. I haven't been able to confirm traffic numbers. You guys use Quantcast. Will you give me access to Quantcast so I could confirm your numbers?
Yeah, I'll send you a Google Analytics.
Send me Google Analytics.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. All of these, it's so funny. We're on Quantcast and on Compete. And what's the other one?
Compete is junk. I compare my Compete numbers to my Google Analytics numbers, and they're nothing near each other.
Yeah, Compete and ComScore and Quantcast. We're on all of them, and they all show completely different things. And Google Analytics shows completely different things. So, you know, we tend to rely on Google Analytics a lot and sort of cross our fingers and hope that when people come across our site, it says the same relative thing. But, yeah, I don't think any of this has been figured out. And, you know, we choose not to embellish our numbers because, you know, I think that a lot of people believe you should fake it till you make it in this space, but I just can't do that. It doesn't, everything about our brand stands for something different. So, you know, if I say we're at nearly 2 million uniques, it's true. And I'll send you the Google Analytics to prove it.
All right. And let me see, what else I want to know? Oh, I want to know about two things. One thing that I'm probably not supposed to ask about, but I bet it's on the audience's mind, so I got to ask about it. And the second thing is about an experiment that you did with your own body. But first, let me say this. Guys, the reason that Derek and I met is he and I were getting ready to record a course on how he gets traffic. And he actually outlined it, broke down his whole process, including the email that he sent out to influencers about how he comes up with link bait and spike bait, about how he finds content's voice. If you're talking about content marketing and using it to grow traffic, this guy's done it, and I'm going to confirm by looking at his Google Analytics. And then I will record a course with him where he teaches how he does it. And I've got all these visuals. Every email apparently that he sent out, it feels to me like, as I'm looking at my notes here, is here. He was extremely generous with his process, and we'll teach that. We went through the process last week of setting up and looking at the notes, and this week, tomorrow, actually, we're going to record it. Derek, be honest with me, now that we've talked for endlessly, you and I, was I being too much of a jerk up front when I said, when I was pushing and pushing for more visuals and more data? Because you're doing me a favor. You're working for me for free like your friends, you know, where you're coming in, you're teaching my audience, you're helping me grow my part of the part of the business that generates revenue. And here I am, like, being skeptical and pushing. Honestly.
Andrew, you do a good service for people. I've watched so many of your videos, and they have helped me. I honestly don't feel like I'm doing you a favor. I hope that I'm helping the people who end up listening to this. It's why I teach my classes, not to make money through Skillshare and General Assembly. I do it because I genuinely think there isn't enough high quality products and content on the web, and anything I can do to help that happen, you know, the better. And look, you know, I was helped very much along my path. I wish I would have been helped more. I've got such a long way to go, and I find that helping people and, you know, putting myself out there and sharing the little that I've learned comes back to me. Maybe just, like, helps me sleep at night, makes me feel better. But, you know, I find that that's how you can create relationships, and that by giving and putting into stuff, you know, I end up, I don't know, at the very least, people begin to, you know, take some kind of respect for me and get that, it, you know, by getting my face in front of them, they see that I genuinely care about the space so profoundly.
I'm grateful to you for doing it. And guys, if you're Mixergy Premium members, this will be part of your membership. And if you're not, please sign up. Go to MixergyPremium.com. The more we talk, the more excited I got. You can actually watch a recording of it and see me get enthused by the end. I sense at first you were like, dude, I was introduced to a friend. Everything's good. It's all, like, lined up. And now what are you pushing? And then by the end, I felt like you were saying, dude, calm down. It's just, like, it's just business. It works, but this isn't, I don't know. It's not manna from heaven. Just relax. It'll work. It'll be good for your audience. You don't have to be that enthused. Anyway, so if you're not a Mixergy Premium member, go to MixergyPremium.com right now and sign up. And if you are, of course, you'll get it. I guarantee you'll love it. I don't guarantee you'll be as enthused as I am, because I think I was way too enthused during it. But I do know that you will find
it exciting. That's not underplayed.
I think it'll be exciting. And here's what I will say. They will find at least one idea, at least one, probably seven. I'm looking at the notes myself, but at least one idea that they can use and implement in their business and get traffic. And that's basically what the stuff's about. Find just that one thing, go use it, come back after you get some results. MixergyPremium.com. All right, here's the thing that I'm not supposed to ask about, but I got to. I'm looking over your shoulder the whole time wondering, what is that? What is that over your shoulder?
Oh, it's a half of a table.
It's the leg of a table?
It's the, I think it's the platform on which the table, like, top sits. Some IKEA product.
I see.
We can't fit in our office, so we're moving tables around.
I see. I thought it was some kind of printer that did something. All right.
I wish it was some kind of very actually, that's how we get traffic. All of it comes from that.
What do you mean? People all want to see what that is?
I'm just kidding. There's nothing.
I know that at least anyone who's been listening in the background has got to come back and take a look at this, but we've all been wondering. We always look over people's shoulders. that's why Guy Kawasaki keeps telling me, put stuff behind you, because people are looking over your shoulder, Andrew. Give them something to see. So I'm going to work on it.
I guess I should have put something better than a yoga mat and a broken table. Next time. I'm learning.
So here's the last part. Your abs. I've heard so much about your abs. What is this thing that you did, and how was it? I've seen your abs. That video of you transition. You could talk about it. I've seen your abs now on video for.
Yeah, no, I for some people love this stuff. So people love the abs thing, and I've seen a million times in a million different ways, you know, headlines and advertisements on the TV, and you know, every cover of every magazine says here, get 6-pack abs in 6 weeks. And that's always frustrated me because I think it was possible. So I decided to sort of look, our mission is just to help people think of health and wellness in a healthier way and to take this really scientific but friendly approach to things. And I decided to put it to the test. And so I tried to get 6-pack abs in 6 weeks. And I wrote every week a blog post. I cataloged everything I ate, every workout that I did, every single thing. And I got the 6-pack abs. And I promptly lost them, but I did get them. And I did take some pretty ridiculous pictures that one day I'll show to my grandkids. And they
won't. I thought all the pictures were online. What's not online now?
Oh, no, they're online. They're all, unfortunately, for better or for worse, they're all online.
Did you shave your chest in that last photo?
Oh, yeah. No. Everything had to be done. There was water manipulation. The basic idea was, what would it take to get there, and is it worth it? And I went into it with a bias that you don't need 6-pack abs to be happy, which I, you know, confirm. You don't need them to be happy. And then, most importantly, having them definitely doesn't make you happy. And I was pretty miserable. Now, to be fair, that doesn't mean that getting a 6-pack, you know, 6-pack abs at all is a bad thing. It's obviously a superficial goal, but that's okay. If you do it in like a healthy way and can maintain that, awesome. But definitely doing something in such a short period of time, I basically ate everything I looked at for a month and a half afterwards. So I'm absolutely back to the weight that I started at. And I was really cranky and miserable for those 6 weeks. Ended, you know, really hurt some of my relationships. It was really tough. And I, you know, would sit there at dinner parties and not eat a thing. Couldn't drink. It was really pretty crazy. Wasn't doing anything.
You can do it if you're willing to put yourself through that torture. You can do it within 6 weeks.
You can do it. I did it, right? I started at a level that I think anyone who would actually seriously think about getting 6-pack abs has to be. I don't consider myself the healthiest person, but I was in, you know, in shape, relatively in shape. But it is possible. And I didn't do anything dangerous at all, right? It was just calorie restriction. I ate just vegetables and lean protein, basically.
Dude, do you know how much money you can make on ClickBank by just writing an ebook about how you did it?
Yes, I do. unfortunately, and that's the reason why I did it was so that people could see the other side of it. And within weeks, we had people responding saying, "You know, I was thinking of doing something similar, and after reading your account, this doesn't sound like something I want to go through." And you know, that made it worth it. I mean, truly, right? Look, like my body is more or less recovered. It definitely hated me for a little while there, but and I had this weird, bizarre experience. And I saw what I look like with 6-pack abs, and I looked good. I mean, it was definitely interesting.
It's a good photo to keep.
And who knows what psychological scarring I endured because of it. But the story that I told about how lonely it was and how tough it was in social situations, and how it really puts you outside of society for a while. It just wasn't worth it to me. I love ice cream, and you know, well, even though I eat more or less healthy, I wanted to eat ice cream.
It's a good series. It's all up on Greatest. In fact, if you just Google it, you'll find it. But if you go to greatest.com, you can see the site we've all been talking about. And if people want to just thank you directly, Derek, the way I'm about to, what's a good way for them to connect with you and say, I saw your abs. Thanks for telling me I don't have to do it. And also thanks for showing me how you got all that traffic.
I love emails, Derek@greatest. It's just DEREK@greatest.com. Or you can connect with me on Twitter. I'm TheDerek. On Twitter.
All right. Derek@greatest.com. Cool. Thank you for doing this interview, and thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.